Station number 14978, Charles Turnbull, Reel 9.
Mr. Turnbull, Reel 9. You wanted to put in some additional information about what the battalion was up to after France, Mr. Turnbull.
After France, one of the things I omitted to say was that we were sent down to man defences on the south coast. The coastline extended from Exmouth. We had units stationed Exmouth, Dawlish Warren, Dawlish, right up to Totnes. The task there was that nothing had been done, and we had to put up wire defences along the coastline, man machine gun posts, and dig slit trenches along the coastline. D Company was stationed on Dawlish Warren. The accommodation there was in beach huts. The weather at that time was quite good. And if one could say that after our experiences in France, we had quite a pleasant time once we had commenced to construct what was necessary. At night time, patrols were done along the coastline by coastal vessels, which were manned by DLI personnel, as it was thought that this was an extreme vulnerable point in the case of a German invasion. One thing that comes to my mind was we weren't troubled by German aircraft at all, apart from one occasion when a German bomber zoomed over a clifftop post. But the man who was behind the gun on this post, he was so nonplussed at seeing this plane suddenly appear that he forgot to pull the trigger. And before we knew where we were, the bomber had appeared over the coastline. No doubt at the time, the lad who was manning the post was blasted a little bit. And I can remember shouting, "Press the bloody trigger, press the trigger." But of course, what could one say? It was so unconcerting to see this bomber just flash over the point within what literally looked to be a few yards, that really, if this had been done, I contend that probably the bomber could have been shut down. But there again, this is one of the things that happened in warfare, that one never knows what the reaction of anyone could be.
Were the civilians sent off from the coast? Those that were living up on the coast itself?
No, they still remained in the wherever they lived. They still remained at in those places. Nothing had been moved back at all. In fact, in Dawlish itself, things continued as normal, because with being stationed on the Warren, if one had any off-duty time at all, used to walk along the coastline into Dawlish, where things were quite pleasant. People walked around the parks and that sort of thing, just as they did in normal times. The train still ran, which was, anyone that hasn't been down there, quite a very pleasant journey, following the coast all the way along. That one had the idea that really when peacetime did return, it would be one of the coastlines that one would like to visit with one's family. And we can always remember that on the Warren, there was a cafe there which was the Wright family that used to run this place, and the two girls who were in, their husbands were serving in the forces. And of course the Wrights, they did everything they possibly could to see that the lads who were stationed on the Warren had quite a happy time whilst they were there. Because as they always said, one of their boys was stationed up in Bransworth and around the Barnet Castle area, and they always said how well they'd been treated by North Country people. Therefore they wanted to respond with anyone from the North. And of course, as one can imagine, the two sisters were, if one could say, very pretty ladies, and all the lads were always trying to get away with the Wright sisters, which in some cases they were prepared to have a walk out with any of the lads, but of course that was as far as it got. They were really more concerned about what was happening to their own husbands and wouldn't do anything untoward.
And was this the same with the population in the area? Did they receive you well?
We were well received by the people there. If one went to the local pub in the Warren, which was on one of the hilltops, one was always well received by the people there. Different to what happened in one place in particular in Wales, Carmarthen, where one didn't have a very pleasant reception. If one went into a public house there, as soon as one went in, the speech and the talks were done in the Welsh language, that the English wasn't spoken at all. I don't know why this should really happen, whether they hadn't had a very good connection with regiments that had been there before.
The defences that you were making and strengthening, did you feel at the time that they would be adequate if there'd been an invasion? Was the materials there?
In my opinion, what was really constructed at that time, I don't think that there would have been adequate. That they were still really vulnerable. I mean, really all that we had was really small arms, machine gun posts, but we didn't have a backup of sort of anti-tank guns or anything like that. That really, at that time, well, we still didn't have any material necessary to repel an invasion with what I assume the Germans would have been equipped with if they'd had to make a landing.
You had no support arms with your knee, I'm thinking in terms of artillery.
Not where we were. As one could imagine, it was really a beach defence. That really, if the beach defences had been overcome, I think then probably, I don't know what the plan was, but I don't think really effective measures had been really carried out to the fullest. But I think if the defences had been penetrated, I can't see where there would have been a great deal to forestall a plan if it had been planned out the way the British plan was planned, sort of on D-Day, if it had been as good as what that was. But whether the Germans were equipped correctly for an invasion, which in my opinion probably they weren't, as really the advance of the German formations towards the French coast, probably that had been far quicker than what they'd ever anticipated. And probably the way things worked out, really they weren't equipped for an invasion.
It was a static defence situation that you were in?
Completely static, yes.
Did your day start with a stand to?
Always a stand to. Stand to in the morning and stand to at night time.
And the duties that you were, did you have to spend some time, in the slit trenches that you dug?
Well, during the stand to periods. After that, during the day, one had to get on with strengthening and doing as much as one could possibly do to improve the coastal defences all the time. And there again, of course, training was still carried on.
Did you have minefields? Played?
No minefields. Not the, where we were.
The training that you mentioned we're carrying on, was that just the normal kind of military training, or were you doing anything particular for the situation that you were in?
I would say really nothing in particular. It was just normal training, ensuring that men kept fit and... Really, I can remember still going on route marches and probably still tactical training came into it a little bit. But the main object was on how to improve the coastal defences all the time mainly. And I think really cooperation between the companies, if anything did happen, one had to remember that the defence by the battalion extended for quite a long way.
Did you have any major invasion scares that you had to stand to for some time?
No scares at all that I can remember.
The officers, where were they living? Were they in better conditions than you were? Probably
how I would say not really. I seem to remember that there were we had these beach huts, which were really quite comfortable. And I can't remember the officers being stationed anywhere else. That really any hotels that there were where we were on the Warren were a fair distance away. It would be different down in Dawlish itself, where the hotels were on the seafront. Although, as I'm not aware of it, but I would assume then that officers would be based in that type of accommodation there. But on the Warren, well, that was completely different. And I can't say with real certainty that really the officers did have more or less the same type of accommodation as what we had, which could be made quite comfortable.
Were you now, had you got your stripe, and were you now with the section?
Well, from Lance Corporal, I was promoted to Corporal within a very short space of time.
And this was in Devon?
That was in Devon. At that time, I would be a corporal.
What date are we talking about?
Well, that wasn't long after Dunkirk. The early days.
Did your duties change as a corporal?
Still in charge of a section.
Same section, same company?
Same company, yes. The idea was, really, at that time, when we came back from Dunkirk, I think the thinking was that the men who had been there did have some experience, and the reinforcements that came into the battalion, the brigade, were really like what we were. new recruits. And I think the thinking was that the people who had been in France, that experience had served them in good stead. And on law, they hadn't been in the forces a great long time. The initial reaction to what happened in actual warfare could really be passed on to new recruits and what they'd had to endure, and really the discipline that had been introduced to them by their early days, what had happened on their initial call-ups, could be passed on. And I think that was the reason why that stripes had been given out to the likes of myself, that the company commander must have thought that really the experience that we'd gained had been beneficial to the battalion, and they were the right sort of people to promote.
Where were your drafts coming from?
I would say really from any area of the country then, not purely from the North Country, that we did have southerners, and I can remember one area in particular where I had quite a few from in Hereford, so that really it wasn't entirely a North Country battalion now.
Did they settle in well?
Quite well. I would say really if we had any problem, really normally the problem arose from people who had been from the south. I would say in particular the London area, we used to call them Cockneys, and if anyone didn't respond to the discipline that we had in the north, it was really from anyone really from that area. I don't know what the difference was, whether coming from large cities and towns, it wasn't the way that you'd had from people in the mining areas who had probably been from their initial youth being brought up in a different direction. Like what we said previously, great notice had been taken from the parents right from boyhood, and there again going back to probably World War One, where most of the fathers had been really in the Durham Light Infantry and the Northumberland Fusiliers, and had heard what had gone on in World War One, and were still proud to be associated with the North Country Battalion.
Were these drafts coming direct from Civvy Street, or had they been allocated a local regiment, as you might say, of their own, and then been transferred?
They had really had the initial training in a local battalion and then sent to make up the depleted forces of the brigade in the division, which were at a low ebb after returning from Dunkirk, that they had to have reinforcements and they had to come from somewhere.
So that the fact that they transferred from a regiment they felt they were going into unhappy with to a light infantry regiment, which is an entirely different thing, may well have been one of the causes of the problem, changing cap badges in effect.
Could have done, but really I don't think really that was the main problem. I think really it was from different parts of the country. I think really the southerner always seemed to have the impression that they were better than the northerner. I don't know why, but at that time, conditions always seemed to be better in the south than what they were in the north. And whether that reaction came into it, I don't think it was so much the the battalions that had been called up, and probably like ourselves, had to make the best of the job. And probably this intermingling initially probably went down a little bit the wrong way. But of course this sort of thing had to be overcome, and in it, and after a period of time it was overcome, that the soon learned that really they had to fall in line or else.
And they settled in well and became as good as the Northerner, in the soldier sense.
I would say yes. That really he had some quite educated young men. One in particular I can remember who was a great friend of mine, was a Corporal Nixon. He eventually was a corporal. And he had a good education. And I can always remember that really we used to go about together with other lads in the company. And Ken, he always struck one. His education sort of came right to the forefront. Not that he was any better of a soldier, but after quite a long period, people were selected to go on an octu, and he was one that was selected. And I can always remember thinking, why should it be him and not somebody else who was in some ways the makings of a better soldier? But I think at that time that factor must have been taken into consideration, whereby they still wanted probably the officer type. In my opinion, the higher ups must have thought that they were that little bit better to become an officer, which in my opinion was all wrong. Because I found that later on he could have had his training in Octu, but when the true test came is what happened in actual battle. That was when one found out who were the real men and the real leaders.
In your experience during the war, did that attitude change and they were going more for battle-worthy soldiers, for officers rather than status?
Yes, I think it did later on. Because one found that later on, men were really promoted from the ranks more than not what they had done initially.
The quality of your officers in Devon, had they changed at all in any way, or were basically the same as you'd had?
They were basically the same as what we had, apart from the ones, of course, that had been lost. But there again, reinforcements came in. I can remember that we had drafted in one Canadian lieutenant. His name has slipped me mind, but he was a very nice chap and easy to get on with. I can always remember him saying to me at the end of the war, the likes of you would do well in Canada and it was a land of opportunities. But he was the type of chap who really liked to be with the men and part of the men. Therefore, that type of a person, he got instant response from the men who he was commanding.
You've intimated that that was an important quality of an officer, that they could reach the men.
In my opinion, yes.
Were there any other qualities that you looked for the good officer?
One who could make instant decisions. One soon sensed that he knew what he was on. And he wasn't afraid to show his authority. And had the powers of command, and as soon as one sensed that that quality was there, he gained everybody's respect and were willing to fall in line at all times with what he had to say. But when one came against indecision, that was when one thought, was this person the right man for the job?
Were they teaching initiative in your training situation, right down to the lower ranks? Were you, as a corporal, for example, being taught to have your own initiative in certain situations?
Yes, that was the training at all times. There again, if anything happened to the officer in charge of the platoon, one had to have the training where you were capable of taking over and commanding that section or the platoon or whatever it was, even one could say right up to company status.
And in training they brought these situations about where you were in effect given command, where the officers
gone. Yes, that was brought out.
Did you feel
I can always remember where in one instance when one got a new officer coming along, a commanding officer, up to company standard, he would say later on to whoever was probably the highest NCO, he would probably give you a task instead of transporting a company from one area to another area. He would come along and say, right, I'm not going with it today. You take the company from here to there. And we're willing to give you tasks like that to perform, to find out if you were capable of carrying out any orders that he himself had to undertake.
Had this approach to initiative changed from what it had been prior to going to France? Or was it part of the French experience?
I would say it was part of the French experience. After all, the majority of people who served there, they hadn't had to contend with actual combat, and these occasions were thrust upon them which you'd never had to participate in before.
How long were you in Devon?
I would say a few months. Can't remember exactly how long, but not a great long period. Probably 3 months.
And you went from Devon direct to Scotland to go to Iceland, and not, as we talked about on the last tape, that you'd gone to Wales.
I think we... I think we did move from the Devon coast before we went to Scotland. We must have done. Because it was directly after Dunkirk we went onto the South Devon coast. We must have done.
We can now go forward to sailing for Iceland. Where? What month was it again that you sailed for Iceland?
We sailed in the September.
The journey itself, you got on the boat, flat-bottom boat, I think you mentioned in the previous tape. Was it an easy journey?
It was quite an unpleasant journey. The sea wasn't very calm, quite rough. And the conditions aboard weren't good. I think everybody suffered from seasickness. And after a period, I think it was of about five or six days, we landed in Reykjavik and everybody was glad to get off the boat. We but had travelled in convoy, of course.
Was it a big convoy?
Fairly large.
You said the conditions on board weren't good. What particularly was bad about them?
Well, myself, I was quite fortunate that at that time I had been promoted to sergeant.
So you promoted sergeant before you left England?
That's right. And
you've done, in effect, private to sergeant in about 3 months, 4 months. From coming back from Dunkirk to leaving in the September.
Yes, as quickly as that.
Mm-hmm. So your conditions were slightly better than
slightly those. Better, that I had been allocated a small cabin. And the men were like on sort of a mess deck. You know, like used to feed on the in these decks below. And I think it was hammocks strung about, but with the rocking and rolling, and I can remember it was quite a job to get from where I was along to see how the men were getting on a morning and that sort of thing. When one didn't feel too grand, that was quite a bit of a task to turf oneself out and get along and carry out any duty that you had to do. So that really, when we got there, I would say that everybody was glad to get off the boat. So I would say that I wasn't a good citizen.